I grew up very poor, in rural Jamaica, and I dreamt of like big, beautiful, fabulous things. So when I had access to these things, my creativity just flows. So I think because I didn't have much and I know how to work with nothing, that kind of allows me to do what I'm doing and create the things that I've created, because it's like, give me a little and I can make a lot. So just having nothing and being forced to work with the little things has given me the advantage over some people.
Hey, this is Epicenter NYC. We connect your communities to news, information, and each other. I'm your host, Amber Castillo. When Lolita Malone was growing up with three younger sisters and their baby brother in rural Jamaica, she and her siblings shared clothes, shoes, pretty much everything. They had a tiny allowance but big fashion dreams, so they would hit up thrift shops and cut and upcycle clothes. Now, decades later, Lolita and her daughter Maui have launched a Manhattan-based fashion brand of their own, Maui by Lolita. Their designs are for bold, daring women who want to take risks when it comes to what they wear. Today, I sit down with Lolita to learn about the story behind Maui by Lolita and what's next.
Could you take us to the very beginning in a nutshell, how the company started or how the idea for the company started?
Yes, sure. We started during the pandemic when Maui was home from school. We had a lot of time to spending together. So we decided to just embark on something that I had already started. I was always a fashion designer, but during the pandemic, I was able to focus more on things for myself, because I'd always started projects, but never had a time to complete them for myself. I would work for other people, but not for me. And one day I made a tracksuit and Maui loved it. And she said, you should sell that. I was like, yeah, I think I will sell that. So we did. And then we'd go on walks, like quite a few walks in our neighborhood. And we lived in Florida. And one day I was thinking, it's like, I should ask her to be a part of the company with me. And I did. And she said, absolutely. So we sat down and we came up with a formal business plan, the ownership percentages. And we just hit the ground running from there. We did everything ourselves in the beginning. And it was fun.
Did you have a name for your company or for your business before starting this?
So before this, I did primarily swimwear. I had Leonessa Swimwear and Maui Kai Swimwear. And those did okay, but it just didn't take off. It didn't take off like I wanted to. So I always said that Maui was the missing piece of the success puzzle for us.
What do you think it is about Maui and what she brings that changed it for you?
So she does the things that I don't necessarily want to do. She's more on the business side. I'm more on the creative side. While she does have creative input, she's the creative director. So as far as the broader picture of the direction of the brand, that is her area of expertise. I just focus on making the clothes look good and making sure that each piece, each collection is something that's aligned with what we want and where we want to go as a brand. But she brings to the table the business acumen, the financial. She has a degree from Loyola Marymount in finance. So she brings that side, and there's just the overall direction and path of the brand.
Besides the formal school training you just mentioned, are there other places that she's told you or that you've seen her really glean those skills from?
Just honestly, so she's always been into fashion. She's been around me her whole life. So she just, she gravitated towards it. I would make clothes for her. We did her prom dresses, things to go out to events. We did that. So she was always a part of it and she loved it. And also the modeling aspect, she's 4'11" and she's always wanted to model. But once she realized that she wasn't going to grow to that model height, she kind of gave that up. But after we started the brand, she was able to model for us. It was like, hey, I can actually do this. And she started modeling. And that's something that, that she's done really well with.
How does that play into how you guys think about inclusivity, in your designs?
So it's funny, when I first started designing, the first thing I did was my prom dress in high school, 30 eons ago, a long time ago. I did that because I was always the tiniest one. Nothing fit. I had to make my own clothes because I was skinny. I was like, it's two twigs. And I had no choice but to create things for myself where I would never look good. And even with Maui being 4'11", that's also something she struggles with, finding clothes that fit her height, her, and her body proportions. So that's something that we embrace being able to cater to the people that aren't, you know, looked over when it comes to dressing and size inclusivity. For on the opposite end, there's a lot of focus on the larger end, but there's very, very little focus on, you know, for skinnier people or tiny, shorter people. So we want to make sure that those people aren't forgotten when it comes to looking good in the fashion industry.
Yeah, definitely. As someone who's 5'0", I definitely had the experience of having to go to the little girl section. But they didn't have the style that I wanted. I saw in your fashion shows, you really incorporate women of all kinds of, you know, shapes, sizes, and all of that. Could you speak to how that works in terms of the design? Does that change anything about the design itself?
My creative process is slightly different than most designers. I generally make things for me first, and then hopefully everyone else will like it. So I only make things that I believe in and that I would wear myself. And luckily, these are items that look good on anyone. You know, it's just like if you're a fly girl at heart, if your style encompasses certain things, then this dress will look good on you. This trench will look good on you. These pants will look good on you. So if you're size, you know, if you're a size 0 or a size 10, if you're comfortable with that style and that design for you.
Got it. And then when you were speaking about fly girl before, when did this concept of the fly girl come about? What was the origin?
This was, we actually started that when we started the company. We were just playing around with ideas. And I said, our stuff is for fly girls, like for fly girls only. So that became our slogan, you know, bold, daring women who not just take fashion risks, but are comfortable with how they look and how they dress. And they don't want to look like anyone else. They want to be the best dressed person in the room. They are the best dressed person in the room.
And then you also mentioned boldness in your designs. And I'm wondering if you could speak about the last moment that you were bold that comes to mind.
I've always been one to take fashion risks. I've never wanted to look like anyone else. I'll wear the brightest thing I can get my hands on, the most over-the-top intricate designs that no one else would wear, because I don't like looking like anyone else. So even the other day, I was working on something. I was creating something new, and it seemed like in my head, it was one way, but when I was finished with it, it came out another way. It's like, no, that looks too close to something that I've already seen. So I just played around with some things, and I cut things differently and made a whole different design. So it's just for me, I don't want to look like, and I don't want to create things that everyone's already seen. We have our trenches, but no one's done them the way that I've done them. So it's like, yes, you've seen a trench coat before, but not like this.
Could you speak a bit about what that was like with them when you guys participated in New York Fashion Week, and what are some of your most powerful memories from that experience?
The best memories for me is just seeing going back and watching the videos from the audience and just looking at the different audience members, their reactions when certain pieces walk out. Because when you're in the moment, you're not going to see everything. I'm trying to live in the moment and enjoy and appreciate where I am, because it took a lot for me to get there. And I'm very grateful for all the opportunities, for the people that do show up, for, you know, the ones that believe in me. So when I get moments like that, I try to live in that moment and appreciate it, because somebody wants to be here that cannot be here. I asked to be here. So I want to show my appreciation for being in the moment. But immediately after, when I want going back and I'm looking at the tapes, just looking at everyone's faces and seeing the genuine love for the pieces that we put out, that is the best feeling for me. It's like, you're like, oh, I want that one. Oh, yes, yes, yes. You know, those things, like when you see the things that garner the positive reactions from the audience, for me, it's such a wonderful feeling.
And what was it like preparing for Fashion Week?
It's the creative part is good. It's just the making sure we get the right people, the right press, dealing with the, you know, people confirming and not showing up because we're not a huge brand. And next thing you know, you have half of your seats are empty because nobody wants to come unless we're paying them to come. Those are the hardest things for emerging brands like myself, because nobody wants to be the first one to believe in you. Unless somebody huge jumps on board and say, hey, I'm wearing My by Lolita, then everybody wants to come, but nobody wants to be that first one. So every influencer is asking for $20,000 for them to come and watch my show. And everyone, you know, it's just it's heartbreaking, and it's very discouraging at times to convince people like, hey, yeah, my stuff is really good. Come and look, come and see. Just come. Like, no, we don't know you. Sorry, we're not coming. So it's, you know, it's hard. That part is hard. But I never second guess the creative side of it, because I know that our stuff is beautiful. I know it, you know, it's different, and everyone would love it. Just nobody wants to look because no one looked before.
And how did you navigate that when folks were, you know, maybe not giving you guys a chance at that point?
We ignore it. Keep moving. I cannot focus on it. You know, our very first show, a lot of people didn't show up, and it kind of bummed us out for a while. We were very sad and all these things. And it just gets better to deal with. And more, you know, we're a little bit more known now. And so more people are showing up, but a lot of people are still confirming, I'll be there an hour before the show, and then they don't show up. So we just know now to just ignore it and don't let it affect us, because it doesn't change the fact that our pieces are beautiful.
Yeah. And are there any other lessons that you gleaned from New York Fashion Week that you're going to take into the next one?
Just tune out the noise. Trust your process. Trust, you know, whatever is for you will be for you. And the people that believe in you, just lean on that and have them be your support system until everyone else catch up eventually. And just, you know, you cannot rush certain things. I've never wanted to be a fly-by-night online brand. I never wanted to be an Instagram brand. I'm willing to put in the work as long as people show up when they're to show up.
Especially being, you know, a Black woman in fashion design, what are those support systems? Where is that, you know, that community?
I am blessed enough to have the people that work for me. They actually believe in what we're doing. They believe in the brand. They believe in the design. They're not just here to get a paycheck. So for me, that is very important, to have those people there to hold you up when you're second guessing yourself. Because, you know, it does happen. It's very hard to do what we do. And if you have people there that believe in you, it's so much easier.
And what are some of the projects, or what are either like design projects or collaborations or anything like that you're looking forward to?
So we're in the process of collabing. It's not a done deal yet, but we're working to do a capsule collection with an influencer, a capsule swimwear collection, because swimwear is my passion, but I didn't want to do a large swimwear drop this season. So I'll do a smaller capsule with someone to partner with and just use that and push that for this coming spring. And we're also including fragrances in this collection and some bags as well.
And then that would be for sometime this spring, later this spring.
Already available on our site, and we'll be gifting those out soon, but the bags will be dropping in a few months.
Awesome. And then could you speak about also the power of joy? I know you said, like, you know, you don't let the noise, you know, kind of tune out the noise, and like you really focus on that joy. What are some ways that you center joy in your life, like even outside of the company?
I celebrate the small wins. Every magazine article, every feature, everything new that we get, every purchase, anything small or big, I celebrate and I appreciate every single thing, because it did not have to happen. So I appreciate everything that we get. If I get an order for $30, I'm appreciating it. If someone gives a compliment, someone comments on Instagram, I love it. So it's just the little things, not just the balls, but the big things. Just to appreciate everything.
What's your favorite part of the business?
Favorite part of the business for me is just creating. Seeing, going from concept to creation, just looking at a piece of fabric and no one else sees where I'm going with it. I'll just look at this weird piece of sequin thing. I was like, yeah, that'll be a really cool sweatsuit. Sweatsuit. Trust me. And that's the thing. Maui, she never gets where I'm going, but she never second guesses me. She is like, I don't think we're going with it. But when she sees the final project, she's like, wow. And people or think to do that with what you did. So for me, the creative part, just looking at something's like, yeah, I think that I know exactly what to do with that.
And the toughest part of running this business.
Toughest part is dealing with the people who don't understand the creative part as a designer and want to be a part of the process, but don't respect the creative part. They want to, I don't know, I want to say like people who want to charge you $30,000 for something, but they don't understand that I'm not making $30,000 from said thing. And I just invested $200,000 over the last 3 years, and I've only made $1,000 from those things. So it's just, that is the hardest part, to get people to understand. Yes, I understand what you're doing is a business, what I'm doing is a business, but just try to see things from my perspective, and just being, having, getting the respect from other people to even, you know, in a collaborative effort.
Yeah. And then my last question is, are there any other aspects of your identity, for instance, you know, having the immigrant experience that you think also informs your work and your business philosophy?
Oh, absolutely. Because I grew up very poor in rural Jamaica, and I had nothing, and I dreamt of like big, beautiful, fabulous things. So when I had access to these things, my creativity just flows. So I think because I didn't have much and I know how to work with nothing, that kind of allows me to do what I'm doing and create the things that I've created, because it's like, I don't need a lot to create. I need, you know, I need to create a lot. Give me a little and I can make a lot. So just having nothing and being, you know, being forced to work with the little things has given me the advantage over some people. Like, there are people with all the money in the world with zero creativity.
To shop Maui by Lolita, visit mauibylolita.com or click the link in our show notes. And if you know of a local business that you think Epicenter should feature, let us know. Drop us a note at hello@epicenter-nyc.com. That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting us as we do our best to support our community. We couldn't do it without you. For more stories like this, make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at epicenter-nyc.com. Our intro music is All the Pretty Horses by Cara Vika. You can find more of their music on their website, linked to in our podcast description.